There's an event that probably took place today, and it's interesting that the sermonette actually dealt to some degree with that event, because on the last day of unleavened bread, according to what it says in Josephus, Jericho fell, as far as the Josephus is concerned. If you turn over to Joshua chapter 4, and if we start and pick it up in verse 19, we see here that it says, "And the people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month." Now that's a significant day. The 10th day of the first month was the time when they would select the Passover lamb and they would put it to one side, and it would be there in the kind of environs of the house and be specifically selected for that purpose. So they were going through the Jordan, and the Jordan was miraculously held back at that particular time. And it says, and they encamped in Gilgal. Now make a note of that, you know, just a mental note that they're now in Gilgal, because we'll come back to that a little bit further on in the sermon. In the east border of Jericho, and they took 12 stones, which they took out of the Jordan, and Joshua pitched in Gilgal, and he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, "When your children shall ask your fathers in times to come, saying, 'What do these stones mean?' then you shall let your children know, saying, 'Israel came over this Jordan on dry land.'" In other words, they actually went to the riverbed of Jordan, and they selected as large stones as they could find in the riverbed, with all the waters backed up by behind the Ark of the Covenant. And they selected these stones, 12 of them, the leaders of each of the tribes, and built this monument. "For the Eternal your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you until you were passed over, as the Eternal your God did at the Red Sea." So here we're finding, on the same period of time as we find ourselves in today, the unleavened bread, or just coming into the time of unleavened bread, they were entering into the promised land. And it says, "Which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people on earth may know the hand of the Eternal, that it is mighty, and you may fear the Eternal your God forever. And it came to pass, when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the side of Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites which are on the sea, heard that the Eternal had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel, till they were passed over, that their heart melted, and neither was their spirit in them any more, because of the children of Israel." Now what Josephus actually says about this particular event, you know, we need to understand something. He says in, this is Antiquities of the Jews, book 5, chapter 1, he says, now in paragraph 3, if you want to look it up, it says, "Now while Joshua the commander was in fear about their passing over Jordan, for the river ran with a strong current, and it could not be passed over with bridges, for there have never been bridges laid in hereto." So there's never been a bridge across this particular section of Jordan. And remember, it goes down to the Dead Sea. So here they were going to have to come across into the Promised Land, having defeated the nations on the eastern side of the Dead Sea. And it says, "While he suspected that if he should attempt to make a bridge, that their enemies would not afford him that to be able to perfect it. And for ferry boats, they had none." So without this miracle from God, they couldn't even come into the Promised Land. And so the fact that they were able to walk in there with the Ark, the Levites, stop the Jordan, and it was a type of going through the Red Sea again. And it was at this time of year. It was at the time of year. And if you notice, it goes into the fact that they were then circumcised, which they'd have to do to keep the Passover. And in verse 10, it says, "The children of Israel encamped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month." So presumably, they went to camp in Gilgal around the 10th of the month, were circumcised, recovering from that, and then on the 14th day they kept the Passover, as they're instructed, even in the plains of Jericho, and Jericho was fairly close by. And if you notice in chapter 6, in verse 2, it says, "And the Eternal said to Joshua, 'See, I've given into your hand Jericho, and its king thereof, and the mighty men of valor, and you'll encompass the city and all your men of war, and go around the city once, and you'll do that for 6 days.'" Now, what we're looking at this time, if I just pick up what Josephus has to say about that, he points out, he says, "The Canaanites did not attack them, but kept themselves quiet within their own walls. Joshua resolved then to besiege them, so on the first day of the feast..." the priests carried the ark around about. So Josephus makes it very clear that it was the first day of the feast that he went round once, and then every day of the feast they went round until this day that we're in today, and they took the city. And it was on this day that this city was taken. And again, Josephus actually brings out that this sin of Achan, that all the wealth that was in that city, all the gold and silver and that type of wealth, well, everything else was wiped out to be utterly destroyed. But that type of wealth was to be first fruits, and it was to be counted as first fruits as they went into the land. So the symbolism throughout this particular event that took place. Another thing that is quite interesting in the antiquities, there's a Ninor going past. It was a fire truck. But in the antiquities, in note 9, it says here that the author Mariber Carina, one as old as Alexander the Great, sets down in the famous inscription at Tangier concerning the old Canaanites that are driven out of Palestine by Joshua, taken here in that author's own words. So here they found this inscription, and what the inscription said was, "We are those exiles that were governors of the Canaanites, but have been driven away by Joshua the robber, and have come to be inhabitants here." So that was actually on an inscription, and they found this inscription, which I presume at that particular time, that backs up the claim very succinctly that was being made. So for 7 days they went round, and on this day that actually took place, the walls came down and they took the city. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. This is not a meaning of the day, that's Mr. Ian Henderson is getting that, but Hebrews 11 verse 30, I want you to notice that what happened, how did the walls come down? What in fact caused the walls to come down? And verse 30 of Hebrews 11, by faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about for 7 days. So there is an element within this story, within the story of Jericho, within the story that is all surrounding that time. And notice in chapter 12, verse 1, it says, "Therefore, seeing we are compassed about by so great a cloud of witnesses, so many witnesses of faith, then let us lay aside every weight and the sin that does easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that's set before us." We've got to be able to look back at this time and be able to see the examples that have been given to us and been left to us, and we've got to then learn from them, and learn from them in our own life, that we are living at the close of this age, because there are going to be things that we are very likely to have to go through, where we're going to have to exhibit the same kind of faith and trust God in a physical way, as well as just a spiritual way as well. What I'd like to do today is I'd like to examine the human leader. The human leader that was there at that time. And just have a look at this faith that was involved. Because there are many things about Joshua that we have a great deal to learn from. A great deal to learn from. Another thing is that he was the one who was there after Moses died. Moses, God dealt with specifically. But then the Israelites had to go into the promised land after Moses had gone. And they had to continue with this heritage, the spiritual heritage that they had from Moses. And the key instrument in that was Joshua. So when we're looking at ourselves at this particular time in history, we're not yet in the kingdom of God. Mr. Armstrong, that was prophesied to come in the spirit and power of Elijah, has been and died. And we have got to go forward with the same spiritual heritage that we have been, that has been delivered to us. And the qualities that we can see in Joshua, certainly, I believe, will help us in that task. The five areas I want to cover, the first of all, I want to go into a little bit of background about Joshua. That's the first area. Secondly, I want to talk about the different attitude of mind, the different spirit that was in him, and show the scriptures that talk about this, that how there was a distinct difference with Joshua and also Caleb as well. Thirdly, I want to show you how he was not only just taught by Moses, he was actually taught with Moses as well. God was actually teaching him by and with Moses. Thirdly, I want to show you how he is, fourthly, I want to show you how he is actually taught by Christ in person. And Christ was dealing with him in a very personal way. And finally, I want to show you a little bit about what happened after he died. How this individual and those around him were the ones that kept Israel on the straight and narrow. And after he'd gone, and after those around him had gone, what happened to Israel was just astounding, really, when you think about what the nation had gone through. So let's have a look at some of the, a little bit of the background to Joshua. Let's turn over to Numbers chapter 1. Numbers chapter 1. And just read a little bit about where he came from. Now, almost a common view that people can have when you're looking at Joshua is that he was a servant of Moses. And he was something like almost like a slave, the slave of Moses. So here he was, some low common slave that happened to get in on the inside and managed to make it big. Well, that's a load of nonsense. That's not the way it was at all. And here, in Numbers 1, I want you to notice certain things that are actually said. It talks here, and the Eternal spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of congregation, on the first of the second month, in the second year after they were come out of the land of Egypt. It talks about taking the sum, and it talks about a man with you of every tribe, of one head, in verse 4, of the house of the fathers. Now these people, notice in verse 16, were the renown of the congregation, princes of the tribes of their fathers, heads of thousands in Israel. These were the key individuals throughout all of Israel, the entirety of the nation, one for each tribe. And I want you to notice down in verse 10, of the children of Joseph of Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Amihud. Now you can read straight over that. Who was this Elishama? Well, it was Joshua's grandfather. Now Joshua was the son of Nun. Nun was the son of Elishama, and you would put in your notes, if you like, 1 Chronicles 7, verse 26 and 27, which actually gives this sequence. But I wanted to show you that these people, his grandfather, was the leader of Ephraim, Ephraim being the principal tribe, if not the principal tribe, certainly one of the principal tribes, when you think of Joseph and the standing that he had. So, when we're looking at Joshua, he was no ordinary individual. He was somebody who was of a princely family, of the top princely family in Ephraim. And if you turn over to Exodus 17, when we first find him being mentioned, we can then, having looked at his genealogy a little bit, we can understand, therefore, why suddenly when he's mentioned, he's the head of the army. Because here in Exodus 17, in verse 8, notice it says, then came Amalek and fought with Israel at Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose out men and go and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So he went to Joshua. Was it just because he was his servant? No, it's because he was the young man as the head of the tribe of Ephraim, the principal tribe that was there, one of the principal tribes. And notice it says in verse 14, and the Eternal said to Moses, write this for a memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. So even at that early stage, this is the first battle that occurred, Joshua was being selected by God. God knew what he was going to do. And he was being selected by God as a prince within the within Israel. Now, when we're looking at his age, you say, well, how old? I mean, was he only a young boy of 16 or 17? Well, no, he wasn't. At that particular time, he would be about 45 years old. Now, the reason why you can put in your notes, I'm not going to turn there, but Joshua 24, 29 and Judges 2, verse 8. Joshua 24, 29 and Judges 2, verse 8. He died at age 110. Now, when, again, we go to Josephus, it says, so Joshua, when he had thus discoursed to them, this is again from Antiquities, book 5, he died having lived 110 years, 40 of which he lived with Moses. So 40 years he lived with Moses in the wilderness, obviously all the way through the time in the wilderness. In order to learn what might be for his advantage afterwards, he also became their commander after his death, for 25 years. And there's the key. You put 25 years off the 110, you get to 85. So he was 85 when Moses died, so he must have been 45 when he came through the Red Sea and came out of Egypt. And if you go back 45 years before, what happened? Moses left Egypt. So he was born around the time that Moses actually was thrown out of Egypt. And he lived as a slave, as a prince within Ephraim, and then came out at a prime age of about age 45, and came into the prominence within, and he became really Moses' right-hand man. Now, we find in Numbers 13, his name was not Joshua initially. His name initially was Hosea. Numbers 13. Again, we're looking and notice in verse 1, it says, "And the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, Send you men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I will give to the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall you send a man, and for every one a ruler among them." This is why Joshua was sent with the spies. He was a ruler within Ephraim. One from each tribe, each one of these individuals was a prince or a ruler within the tribe. And Moses, by the commandment of the Eternal, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. Every single one of the scribes. They were not just ordinary people. They were people that had been trained, that had been were princes within the tribes. When we come to verse 8, notice, it says, "Of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea," or Hosea. That's exactly the same word as you find as Hosea in the prophet Hosea. Hosea, the son of Nun. And in verse 16, it says, "These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hosea, the son of Nun, Joshua," or Hosea, or Yahweh Hosea. In other words, Hosea means by salvation, rescue. But Joshua means rescue by the Eternal. And it was the rescue by the Eternal which was important in Joshua's life and the thing that Joshua needed to understand. And that is why Jesus Christ, the word Jesus in Greek, is Joshua in Hebrew. And it's because he is by the Eternal will bring salvation. And so and when you look at the background, this man was something special. He really was something special. But God wasn't looking at just the genealogy. He wasn't just looking at the fact that Joshua was a leader within Ephraim. He was looking at the heart. He was looking at the type of person that this individual was. And if we turn over, if we go into the fact that the second point, that it was a different attitude that was visible within Joshua and also Caleb, we can see this over in Numbers, where we are actually, here in Numbers 13. If you notice, in verse 30, it talks about Caleb. And it says, "And Caleb stilled the people before Moses." Now, Caleb was the prince of Judah that was actually sent in there. "Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we were well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We are not able to go up against the people, for they're stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying that the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw are men of great stature." In other words, we can't do it. And in chapter 14, it says in verse 2, "And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, Would to God that we had died in the land of Egypt. Would to God that we had died in this wilderness, rather than going up and inheriting this land that we've got to go into." And down in verse 6, it says, "And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that had searched the land, tore their clothes." So here they were, these were two princes, each ahead of the tribes, one of whom was Joshua. And they both of them had the same attitude of mind. They had the same outlook on life as far as what they had seen and what they felt that could happen. Remember, it talks about the walls of Jericho coming down by faith. And it says, "And they spoke unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it is exceedingly good land. If the Eternal delights in us, then he will bring us into this land, and he'll give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. They trusted God, the essence of faith. That's what it says over in Hebrews 11. And all these things were witnesses. We're surrounded by these type of witnesses of people who were carnal people. By all accounts, they didn't have the Spirit of God in the way that you and I do, as from all we can tell, and yet they had trust in God. And Christ himself says, shall he find this when he comes and returns? Only do not rebel against the Eternal. Don't fear the people of the land, for they're bred for us. The defense is departed from them, and the Eternal is with us. Do not fear them. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Eternal appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before the children of Israel. The Eternal said to Moses, how long will this people provoke me? How long will it be that they believe me for all the signs that I've shown amongst them? They've just come through the Red Sea. They're having manna every day. They have the Sabbath where they don't have manna. They've seen the water coming out of the rock. They've seen all of these things. They stood before Horeb. And yet they don't believe. And yet, as he goes on to explain, notice, turn over to verse 22 in the same chapter. Because all those men that have seen my glory and my miracles that I did in Egypt in the wilderness, and they've tempted me now these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swore to their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoke me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and has followed me fully, this attitude of mind, this frame of mind, him I will bring into the land wherewith he went, and his seed shall possess it. And in verse 28, notice, it says, say to them, as truly as I live, said the Eternal, as you have spoken in my ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness. And all that were numbered of you according to your whole number from 20 years old and upwards that murmured against me, you will not come into the land concerning that I swear, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. These two individuals. It says, but your little ones that you say are going to be a prey, and what's happened in the church? When you look at what's actually taking place within the church, I think some of us, you're looking at the people that have been in the church years ago, back in, say, the 60s or 50s, may have had this frame of mind and this attitude, our little ones that are going to be a prey. And yet it's now those people that will be actually going into the kingdom of God. In many cases, the parents have gone. But your little ones that you said should be a prey, then will I bring in. And they shall know the land which you have despised. And in verse 36, and the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned, he made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander against upon the land. Even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land, they died with the plague before the Eternal. So they were executed by God personally. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were the men that went in to search the land, they lived. Because of the different spirit, because of a different way of looking at what in fact God could do. This is why it's important that we look at Joshua, and we look at these events, and we also learn from them. And learn about this spirit, what kind of spirit was there, what kind of attitude of mind was there. Turn over to Numbers 27, just over a few pages to Numbers 27. Numbers 27, notice in verse 12. It says, the Eternal said to Moses, get up into the Mount Abraham and see the land which I have given to the children of Israel. And this is at the point of his death. And when you have seen it, you will be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother was gathered. This is Numbers 27, verse 14 now. For you rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation to sanctify me at the water before their eyes. That's the water of Meribah in Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin. So because he didn't give God the glory, he said, now you rabble, you want us to get water out of this rock. And didn't point them to God, which he should have done. And it is important that all of us learn that lesson as well, that he had to die. And Moses spoke to the Eternal, saying, "Let the Eternal, the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation." So you can judge the mind, the spirit of all flesh, what is actually behind each individual, which may go out before them, and which may go in before them, and which may lead them out, and which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Eternal are not as sheep which have no shepherd. And the Eternal said to Moses, "Take you Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand upon him." Now, he had the right approach, he had the right mental outlook, that type of spirit that was being talked about by Moses in the preceding verses. "And set him before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation," Eleazar being the son of Aaron, and Phinehas was the son of Eleazar, "and give him a charge in their sight, and you will put some of your honour upon him, that all the congregation of Israel may be obedient. And he will stand before Eleazar the priest, who will ask counsel for him after the judgment of Urim before the Eternal." So using the Urim and Thummim, much as David did when he had the people in Nob, the priests of Nob, gave him also the ability to ask God a question and have the answer come through the Urim and Thummim. "At his word shall they go out, at his word they shall come in, both he and all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation." And Moses did as the Eternal commanded him. "And he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation. And he laid his hands upon him and gave him a charge as the Eternal commanded by the hand of Moses." So he laid hands on Joshua and passed his authority across to this individual to take the children of Israel across into the promised land. And if we turn over across to chapter 32, again it's this different attitude. The reason why this was done in Numbers 32, in verse 11, it says, "Surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt," Numbers 32:11, "from 20 years old and upward, shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me." They were dedicated, in other words, they were not holy, they were not dedicated to God. Their mind was off on whatever they feared. Their mind was on other things. "Except Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Eternal." That is the difference. That was the different spirit. Even in a carnal way, this was the difference that God noticed and was the reason why God actually selected and placed this prince of Ephraim as the commander of all of Israel as he went into the promised land. Now this was being taught, as I mentioned, going on to the third point, it's not just taught by Moses. The qualities that Joshua had, it wasn't just Moses that was teaching him. It was God also, and we'll come on and we'll see certain specifics there. But Joshua was actually with Moses at some remarkable times, quite remarkable. Turn over to Exodus 24. Now here again, we're looking at the very beginning section. They'd had Jesus Christ, as it was, thunder from Sinai in Exodus 20. But here in Exodus 24, notice in verse 12, it says, "And the Eternal said to Moses, come up to me into the mount and be there, and I will give you tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written that you may teach them." So this was the time when the commandments were given on tables of stone by God himself. I want you to notice. "And Moses rose up, and his minister," his servant, "Joshua. And Moses went up into the mount of God. And he said to the elders," the other elders that were there, the other elders from the tribes, "wait here for us." So Joshua went up into the mount with Moses. Now he probably had to say some back, as it says, "for us, until we come again to you, and if you behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man have any matters to do, let him come unto them." And they went up into the cloud. on the mount, and the glory of the Eternal stayed on the Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days, and on the seventh day he called up Moses specifically into the cloud. So Moses went into the cloud, and Joshua then was waiting for him. But Joshua was there at that time when Moses went up, so the two of them were involved in this particular incident. Now, if you notice in chapter 32, this is when they were coming down. Again, it shows that Joshua is there with Moses, or not necessarily with him, but he was up there in the mount when Moses was getting the two tables of stone. And here in verse 15 of Exodus 32, it says, "And Moses turned and went down from the mount, and the two tables of the testimony in his hand. The tables were written on both their sides, on the one side and the other were they written." So there's two tables with written on each side. "And the tables were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God graven upon the tables. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, 'There's a noise of war in the camp.'" So the two of them were coming down. So again, he was involved even in this incident. "And he said, 'It's not the voice of them that shout for mastery, neither is it the voice of them that cry for being overcome, but the noise of them that sing I hear.'" And obviously you see the problem that they have. Interestingly, if you want to keep a marker or something here in Exodus 33, as we'll go into, and just turn over with me to 1 Corinthians 4. 1 Corinthians 4. We find here, because he was a minister of Moses. He was the one servant of Moses. He was somebody who was subservient to what Moses' wishes were. But he was there with Moses in many cases, as we'll go on and see. And in that sense, had the glory that God gave to Moses also went on to Joshua as well. And here in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul points out, and he's talking about ministers, and he says, "Let a man so account of us as the ministers of Christ and the stewards of the mysteries of God." Today, the ministry brought out the sermonette about how certain ministers were never converted and have never been converted. And it says, "Moreover, it is required in a steward," or in stewards, "that a man is faithful." One of the predominant things within somebody who is a minister, the predominant thing is that they are faithful to what is over them. Because what is over them, in the case of a minister of God, is God himself. So this is why we're here right now, is because we cannot find somebody over us who in fact has that faith, has been faithful in the way that he needs to have been to what was placed over him. Titus 1 verse 9. In Titus, just before Philemon and Hebrews, in Titus 1 in verse 9, it says, it's talking about a bishop or an overseer, verse 7, must be blameless as the steward of God. In other words, he is fulfilling God's will, and he is a steward, he is a servant, he's somebody who goes and waits at tables, he's a waiter, he's a minister. "Not self-willed or soon angry or given to wine, or not a striker," not somebody who solves things with his fist, "not given to filthy lucre and money, but a lover of hospitality," in verse 8. "A lover of good things," is probably better translated, certainly margin says, "sober, just, holy, temperate." And verse 9, "holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able to be by sound doctrine, both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers." So he's able to actually administer the word as taught, being the faithful steward that Paul was mentioning over in 1 Corinthians 4. And of course, the classic one, which you put in your notes, you don't need to turn there, Revelation 3:11, it's incumbent on all of us that we hold that fast, which we have. That no man takes our crown within the Philadelphia, what was the Philadelphia era of the church. Turn back, if you would, to Exodus again. Because again, when we're looking at how he was being taught with Moses and by Moses, in Exodus 33, We find here in verse 7, Moses took the tabernacle and he pitched it outside the camp, far away from the camp, and he called it the tabernacle of the congregation. And it came to pass that everyone that sought the Eternal went out to the tabernacle of the congregation, which was outside the camp. So the tabernacle was well away from the camp, and he went out to the camp, to the tabernacle, Moses himself. And verse 11, and the Eternal spoke to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend. And he then turned again into the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed, no, young man, he was 45, but compared to Moses, he was a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. So he again had gone with Moses. He again had been witnessing to these things. He again was being taught with Moses, and he was accompanying Moses in these instances. Turn over to Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31, something else that you may have not have realized before, but in Deuteronomy 31, no, it's not this one, we'll go on and read a little bit more in Deuteronomy 31, but here, in Deuteronomy 31, verse 7, it says, and Moses called him Joshua, and it goes about where Moses actually gave him that name, and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong, of good courage, for you must go with this people into the land which the Eternal has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you will cause them to inherit it. So here was Moses instructing Joshua specifically. And the Eternal, he it is that goes before you. He will be with you. He will not fail you, neither will he forsake you. Do not fear, neither be dismayed. So Moses was encouraging Joshua, the same as Joshua and Caleb were saying, look, don't be fearful. You know, we're going into the land. We possess it. That was 40 years before. And we also, we are to be kings. We are to be priests. We also are going to have the same kind of mentality. A certain backbone needs to be there. The things that we have learned within the apostasy of the church is to determine that backbone. God wants to see whether the backbone is there and whether it's in fact holy to the Eternal, that we are wholly going after the ways of God and not dabbling in areas that we shouldn't be dabbling in. So we've seen how how Joshua was taught by and with Moses. And if we here in Deuteronomy 31, notice what it says in verse 14. You can see how he is actually being taught by God very much. He is being taught with Moses, as we've just seen, and it goes just flows straight into this section. This is the section I wanted you to notice. Verse 14, and the Eternal, this is point 4, by the way, for you has like to have numbers by your points, that he's taught by Christ. In verse 14 it says, and the Eternal said to Moses, behold, the day approaches that you must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tabernacle of the congregation, that I may give him a charge. So here was God specifically, Jesus Christ, specifically dealing with Joshua. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tabernacle of the congregation. And the Eternal appeared in the tabernacle in a pillar of a cloud, and the pillar of the cloud stood over the door of the tabernacle. And the Eternal said to Moses, behold, you will sleep with your fathers, and this people will arise up and go whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, where they go in to be amongst them. And they will forsake me, and they will break my covenant that I have made with them. So the information that Moses knew that this was going to be actually happening, but the information came from God himself. And it came into the song. If you notice, it says verse 19. It says, now therefore write you this song for you and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths. And this song of Moses that is then in chapter 32 on, was indeed this. Let's just read a little bit more of that. Let's see, that's verse 19, where it says, therefore write this song to you and teach it to the children of Israel, put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. And in verse 22, Moses therefore wrote this song the same day, taught it to the children of Israel, and he gave Joshua, the son of Nun, a charge. And he said, be strong and of good courage, For you will bring the children of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with them, will be with you. And in verse 28, it says, gather unto me all the elders of your tribes, your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears, and I call heaven and earth to record against them. For I know, and this was because God had told him, for I know that after my death you will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days. Notice what he's talking about. He goes all the way through to the latter days, to the time that we're in today. It's right the way through that this is going to be the case. Because you will do evil in the sight of the Eternal to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. And we certainly find that today. And Moses spoke in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until it was ended. Let's have a look. Now notice in verse 44 of chapter 32, put it into chapter 31, verse 44, and Moses came and spoke all the words of the song in the ears of the people, he and Hosea the son of Nun, Joshua. So it was Joshua as well that had this responsibility to deliver the message of this song of Moses to the people. And we find in Deuteronomy, right at the end, in Deuteronomy 34, notice in verse 9, and Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him, and the children of Israel listened to him, and did as the Eternal commanded Moses. So again, he was a faithful steward, administering the words of Moses faithfully, or words of God through Moses. That's what he was administering, and he was full of that spirit of wisdom in being able to do this. Now in Joshua chapter 1, and you go straight into the book of Joshua, and it says, after the death of Moses the servant of the Eternal, it came to pass that the Eternal spoke to Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses my servant is dead. Now therefore arise and go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that I have given to you, as I have said to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, to the great sea towards the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. So from the Mediterranean, right away across to the Euphrates. Now that's an awful lot of land. Incredible lot of land. There shall not any man be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not fail you, nor shall I forsake you. You be strong, of a good courage, for to this people shall you divide for an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Now we are going into the kingdom of God, but we need the same kind of backbone. We need the same kind of attitude of mind. The kind of attitude of mind that's being described. Only you be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth, but you will meditate therein day and night. Now this was what in fact was said to the kings, and he was to be the prince that was leading Israel at that time. And we are to be kings and priests. That you may observe to do according to all that is written therein, for then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Haven't I commanded you, be strong, be of good courage, don't be afraid, neither be dismayed, for the Eternal your God is with you wherever you go. That is true also of us as well. Keep a hand or a marker in there if you would. And just turn back to Exodus 23, because you asked the question, well, how did that actually occur? Exodus 23. How did he actually speak to Joshua? But Exodus 23, notice in verse 20, it says, behold, I send an angel, a messenger, before you to keep you in the way, and to bring you into the place which I have prepared. Now, this messenger, as we'll come on and see, was Christ himself. We'll see that this messenger actually talked with Joshua, and this messenger that talked with him specifically was Christ. And verse 21, "Beware of him and obey his voice. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if you shall indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies, an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel, my messenger," this is Exodus 23, "shall go up before you and bring you into the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but you will utterly overthrow them and quite break down their images, and you shall serve the Eternal your God, and he shall bless your bread and your water, and will take away the sickness away from the midst of you." So the blessing on the food, and also the blessing of taking away disease from them as well. Go back to Joshua again. In this case, turn over to Joshua chapter 5. And we find here in Joshua 5, this section which we read right at the very beginning, which talks about this area in Gilgal. So here he was at Gilgal, just outside Jericho. And here in Joshua 5, in verse 13, it says, "And it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho," so he'd gone out walking, he'd gone away from Gilgal, and he'd gone towards Jericho just to have a look at the place. "And when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him, with a sword drawn in his hands. And Joshua went unto him and said, 'Are you for us or against us?' And basically asked, 'You know, which side are you on?' And he said, 'No, but as the captain of the host of the Eternal, I have now come.' And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, 'What does my Lord say to his servant?' And the captain of the Eternal's host said to Joshua, 'You get your shoes off your feet, for the place that you stand on is holy.' And Joshua did so." That was Jesus Christ. That was God. That's why he said, get your shoes off, the same way as the burning bush. And here was Joshua being taught by Jesus Christ, specifically in person. And this is the way in which this messenger would appear, as it says there, and notice as it says in verse 10, it says, "And the children of Israel encamped in Gilgal." So it was Gilgal, and they kept the Passover on the 14th. So it was Gilgal, or around that area, that this event took place, that this messenger, this Jesus Christ, appeared to Joshua at that area. If you turn over to Judges chapter 2, Judges chapter 2, we find a reference being made back in Judges chapter 2, verse 1. It says, "And an angel of the Eternal came up from Gilgal." Now, obviously, you know, had he been to Gilgal all that time? Well, no, that was the last time that this angel, this messenger, this of the Eternal's host had been seen. So he came from Gilgal, and he came up to Bochim, and said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and I brought you into the land which I swore to your fathers." Who's speaking? So this messenger, who is this messenger? Notice, it says, I made you to go up out of Egypt and brought you into the land which I swore to your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you will make no league with the inhabitants of this land. So this incident here, at Bochim, and nobody knows where Bochim is. There's no place called Bochim. The reason why it's called Bochim is that Bochim means weeping, because Israel wept. They wept in this area because of what was being said to them. It says, "You'll throw down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this?" So he really, really pasted them for it, because there was a real problem. "Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and your God shall be a snare to you." You're going to have some real problems. And this was being said and being taught by Christ. So again, put a marker in Joshua, Judges, around that area. Turn over to John chapter 6, because we also are taught by Christ. In John chapter 6, as we'll go on and see, Joshua is faithful to the word that was delivered to him. Even though it's being taught by Christ directly, he was still faithful to the word of Christ that came through Moses, because the two words were the same. And here in John chapter 6, this classic verse that Mr. Armstrong read over and over again, verse 44, "No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draws him." So each one of us, John 6 verse 44, each one of us is here because we've been drawn, because we've been chosen. We've been called, rather. "And I will raise him up the last day." But notice in verse 45, the very next verse, "It is written in the prophets, and they shall be all taught of God. Every man, therefore, that has heard and has learned of the Father," so no man comes to me unless the Father that sent me draws him, so he's learned of the Father, his mind has been opened, he's been drawn, and then who does he come to? Well, this living word, which is the book of John talks about, the living word of God. And the word of God is open to us, the very picture of unleavened bread. And here, this living word, he then says, learned of the Father, then comes to me. And here, we see, if we go back to Joshua and Judges, here is this living word, the Logos of old, who is specifically instructing Joshua, specifically giving him the information that he needed, and he was working with him over back in well, let's go back to Joshua chapter 4. Let's go to Joshua 4, and we'll just have a look at the way in which Joshua administered what was given to him. I think we've got plenty of time, actually. I'll probably finish a little bit early today. I thought, with all the scriptures I had, I thought I'd have to race through it. As you're probably aware, I've been racing through this, but I've actually finished a little earlier than I thought. But we're not quite finished yet. The final point is after he died. So let's have a look before he died. Let's just look and see this faithfulness. Joshua chapter 4, verse 10. It says, "For the priests which bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan, until everything was finished that the Lord Eternal commanded Joshua to speak to the people, according to all that Moses commanded Joshua, and the people hastened and passed over." So Moses made the command, Joshua then carried it out, and he was being a faithful steward in actually doing so. Turn over to chapter 8, we find another reference to this, how he was faithfully following this. These are just pulled out of this passage in verse 30. Joshua chapter 8 in verse 30 it says, "Then Joshua built an altar to the Eternal God of Israel in Mount Ebal, as Moses the servant of the Eternal commanded the children of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of whole stones over which no man lifts up an iron, and he offered thereon burnt offerings to the Eternal and sacrificed peace offerings. And he wrote there upon the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he wrote in the presence of the children of Israel. And all Israel, and their elders, and their officers, and their judges, stood on this side of the ark, and on that side before the priests of the Levites, which bore the ark of the covenant of the Eternal, as well as the stranger, as he that was born among them, half of them over against on Mount Gerizim, half of them on Mount Ebal." So Mount Gerizim was the mount of blessing, Mount Ebal was the mount of cursing. "As Moses the servant of the Eternal had commanded before, that they should bless the people of Israel. And afterwards he read all the words of the law, the blessings and the cursings, according to all that is written in the book of the law. And there was not a word of all that Moses commanded which Joshua did not read before all the congregation of Israel, with the women, the little ones, the strangers, and they were conversant amongst them." So all the ones that could understand speech, he got up there and he did exactly what he had been told. And he was totally and utterly faithful as he went into the land. And he was the instrument through which God, and God could see the attitude of mind very early on, the time of the spies, but even before that time of the spies, he could see a frame of mind that was there, that he was going to be faithful all the way through. Notice in chapter 11, Joshua chapter 11, Joshua 11 verse 15, it says, "And the Eternal commanded Moses his servant, As the Eternal commanded Moses' servant, so did Moses command Joshua. And so did Joshua. He left nothing undone of all that the Eternal commanded Moses. So everything that was specified, as far as Moses was concerned, as the word of the Eternal, he was faithful to that. And he also had his own word of the Eternal, because the Eternal, as the messenger, as the angel, Christ was actually dealing with him. And the two words were absolutely coherent. They were both the same. It's the same today. You know, we can read this book, we can see the things that are going on in the world, we can apply it to what is going on right now. We can also go back to the words of Mr. Herbert Armstrong, which are the same, and they also go back to the words of the apostles and the prophets, and the whole thing is one continuous word. One continuous word from the time all the way back. And in verse 23, it says, so Joshua took the whole land, according to all that the Eternal said to Moses. And Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel, according to their divisions, by their tribes, and the land rested from war. So we see here, faithfully following what has been given to him to do. Deuteronomy 20, just go back to Deuteronomy chapter 20. In Deuteronomy 20, notice what the command was. To Israel as a whole. Deuteronomy chapter 20, as they went into the land, verse 15, Deuteronomy 20:15. Thus shall you do unto all the cities which are very far off from you, which are not the cities of these nations. So he's giving some instances of how to treat prisoners and so on of the cities that were in some distance away. But of the cities of these people, which the Eternal your God gives you for an inheritance, you shall save alive nothing that breathes. Nothing. It was to be totally, utterly wiped out. But you will utterly destroy them, namely the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, as the Eternal your God has commanded you. The whole area of Canaan was to be totally wiped clean. And they were to execute everything that breathed was to be put to death. That they do not teach you to do after their abominations which they have done to their gods, so should you sin against the Eternal, your God. So this was the instruction. I mean, remember, the Canaanites were sons of Ham. Canaan was a son of Ham. And also, so was the father, or was the grandfather of Nimrod. They were set of the same ethnic stock as Nimrod. It was Babylon. That's what you're looking at. The same kind of way of thinking, the same direction of life. If we turn back to Judges chapter 1, in the book of Judges, which is a catalogue of errors, but Judges chapter 1, I want you to notice what actually happened. And here in verse 28, and it came to pass when Israel was strong. Now this, Judges 1 is almost like an inset chapter in some way, or rather, Judges 2 really is an inset chapter regarding Joshua and regarding his dealings with God. But Judges 1 describes what actually happened. When Israel was strong, that they put the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out. They wanted slaves. So rather than go and have any kind of war with or buy slaves from outside, oh, well, these Canaanites will do, we'll go ahead and have slaves of the Canaanites. Specifically, totally disobedient to what had been said. Neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites that dwelt at Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt in Gezer amongst them. Neither did Zebulun drive out the inhabitants of Kitron, or the inhabitants of Nahalol, but the Canaanites dwelt amongst them and became tributaries. Neither did Asher drive out the inhabitants of Acho, nor the inhabitants of Zidon, nor Elab, nor, and it gives, you know, one after another, but the Asherites dwelt amongst the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Neither did Naphtali drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, nor the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but he dwelt among the Canaanites and the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of Beth Amash and the Beth Anath became tributes to them, so they wanted them to go ahead and give them some money. They wanted them to go ahead and be slaves. They deliberately disobeyed. And here in chapter 2, and in verse 7, and the people served the Eternal all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Eternal that he did for Israel. So the people that were there, that knew what had actually happened. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Eternal, died being 110 years old. And they buried him in the border in the inheritance of Timnath-Heres, in the mount of Ephraim, on the north side of the hill of Gash. And also all that generation were gathered into their fathers, and there arose another generation after them that did not know the Eternal, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Eternal, and they served the Baalim, they served the lords of that area. And they forsook the Eternal God of their fathers that brought them out of the land of Egypt and followed other gods of the gods of the people. Why? Because they were disobedient in getting rid of the people in the previous chapter. And they bowed themselves to them, they provoked the Eternal to anger, and they forsook the Eternal, and they served Baal, which basically is the sun god. It's Mithras. It's where we get the word Christmas from. We might have to say the word, not necessarily the word Christmas, but Mithras' birthday was 25th of December. They served Mithras, they served Baal, and they served Ashtaroth, from which we get the word Easter, or Ishtar. Again, the spring goddess. And these two primary pagan deities, the male deity and the female deity, the Christmas and Easter, which is the classic ones that we've got today, they serve these two deities, and they polluted themselves. And this happened as soon as he and the people that were with him, the elders that were with him, died. They went straight off. Turn over to Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. It says in verse 21 of Matthew 1, it says, And she shall bring forth a son, and you will call his name Joshua. Because Jesus Christ, the word Jesus in Greek, is the same word as Joshua in Hebrew. For he shall save his people from their sins. Now all this was done that it may be fulfilled, that which was spoken by the Lord the prophet, saying, Behold, a virgin shall conceive. And it says, And bring forth a son, and they will call his name Emmanuel, which means being interpreted God with us. And it is God that will save. Joshua is Yahweh, Hosea, or will save. And it's interesting that when we look at, if we just turn over a few pages to Matthew 24, coming into our time today, we find a time where it says, Watch therefore in verse 42, for you don't know what hour your Lord comes. It says, Therefore, if the good man of the house had known what watch the thief would have come, he would have watched, not allowed his household to be broken up. It says, You therefore be ready, and a faithful and wise servant, ruler over the household, giving food in due season, giving the food as he has been taught. That is what we are about. That's what we've got to be about. Blessed is that servant who his Lord, when he comes, will find so doing. So he goes right the way through to the very return of Christ. Truly I say to you that you'll make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, My Lord delays his coming. It's not now to go down into the kingdom of God. It's not now to inherit the promises that have been given to us. And shall begin to smite his fellow servants, to attack one another, and to eat and to drink with a drunken. The Babylonian system. The gods of the land. And they go down and they'll keep Christmas and they'll keep Easter. Just the same way as they did in ancient Israel as well. And we've seen that. We've seen that within the very church itself. And to whatever degree. Remember the attitude of mind of Joshua. It was that he was holy unto the Eternal. is wholly in the direction that he should have gone. And if we turn over final scripture, Revelation 18, well, this area, Revelation 18, 19. But in Revelation chapter 18, it says here in Revelation 18, verse 3, it says, "For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. The merchants of the earth have waxed rich through an abundance of her delicacies. But I heard another voice from heaven saying, 'Come out of her, my people. Do not be partakers of her sins, and that you do not receive of her plagues.'" We do not go down the route that happened as far as the people that were left in the land after Joshua. Joshua was holy to the eternal. We've got to be the same way. We've got to have the same kind of spirit, the frame of mind that was there. We've got to be according to the living word of God, taught by that living word, being faithful to what the way that word was delivered to us. "For her sins have reached to heaven. God's remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you. Double to her, double." And that makes you wonder whether in fact, you know, the 1 in 10 of Israel that there will be. How many will there be of the beast power? Will it be 1 in 100 or 1 in 20? Will it be what's double to her double? That it's going to be double to her double. "According to her works in her cup which she's filled, you fill to her double." And down in verse 20, "Rejoice over her, you heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, 'Thus with violence shall the great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all.'" So the entirety of Babylon is to be utterly destroyed. Just the same way as it was told to Joshua, go in there and everything that breathes, just take it out. Because he knew that if you go in there and you leave something, it's going to be like a festering sore. It will destroy the very nation. And it did destroy the nation. And when we look here at this Joshua, this Jesus, the Christ, in chapter 19, notice verse 11. "And I saw heaven opened, and behold a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True." The same kind of characteristics that Joshua had. "And in righteousness he does judge, and he makes war. His eyes are a flame of fire, and his head are many crowns, and he had a name written that no man knew but himself. And he is clothed in a vesture dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. And the armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. Out of his mouth goes a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations, and he'll rule them with a rod of iron, and he treads the winepress of the fierceness and the wrath of Almighty God. And he has on his vesture and on his thigh a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords." You know, this King of Kings, this Lord of Lords, that will in fact take Israel into the Promised Land physically, and take spiritual Israel into the Promised Land spiritually and physically. His name also is Joshua. His name also is just what the Joshua of old was, that the Eternal will save.